This weekend starts right after this. Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Geico could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This weekend, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Mayor Pete carves out his space. I'm Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koshenka. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Here's what's coming up this hour.
Democratic presidential hopeful Pete Buttigieg has found a unique spot for himself in a crowded field. What can it do for him as Nevada and South Carolina approach?
A list of money lessons you should have been taught in your 20s, like how a small home is the key to a big savings portfolio.
A World War II vet was hoping to receive 100 cars for Valentine's Day. Then his request went full-on viral. Hear how many cards he's now received.
And for the first time since 1991, there's legit talk of March Madness at Rutgers University.
Rutgers is undefeated at home. They're a perfect 16-0. And within the Big Ten, they're currently tied for third with a few other schools, including Michigan State, which is picked as the preseason number one. So it's been a bit of a weird season for college basketball, but Rutgers is certainly, you know, proving to be on the good side of that weird, I'd say.
Lane Higgins at the Wall Street Journal on the rise of Rutgers basketball. Start with politics. Pete Buttigieg is offering a highly unusual proposition. He's a revolutionary messenger trying to deliver a safe package. The prospects for Mr. Buttigieg, the former mayor of South Bend, Indiana, are hard to gauge, though, because the profile he presents is so different. Jerry Seib, executive Washington editor at the Wall Street Journal, says whether voters find it intriguing or a bridge too far is the question he now has laid on the table. Jerry, your take.
Well, he's kind of two different things at the same time. One is kind of a revolutionary figure in the sense that he's the first openly gay candidate to ever be a serious presidential candidate. Is only 38 years old, which makes him young enough to be not just the son, but the grandson of Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders, two of the folks he's running against. And he's trying to make a leap from mayor of a medium-sized American city, South Bend, Indiana, to president, which has never really been done before. So he's kind of a revolutionary figure, at least that's kind of a revolutionary profile. But at the same time, he's kind of also offering himself as kind of a safe, middle-of-the-road, fairly moderate candidate, at least by today's Democratic standards. You know, he doesn't propose to spend nearly as much money as Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders. He isn't as eager to basically turn the health care system over to the government as some of the more progressive candidates are. He has kind of sort of a modest approach to raising teacher salaries, which makes him different from some other people. He doesn't talk about taking away assault weapons, but having a voluntary buyback. So on all those ways, he's kind of in the middle of the current Democratic pack. So I think he's trying to be appeal to progressives as kind of a young, totally new kind of candidate, while appealing to moderates and older voters by being essentially a middle-of-the-road guy in terms of policy.
You know, when we think of a Bernie Sanders, Medicare for All comes to mind. When it's Joe Biden, it's, hey, I got the experience. With Pete Buttigieg, what is it? I mean, what issues does he want us to believe he champions?
Well, I think he basically, first of all, is the champion of generational change, that it's time to have a new look at all these issues, not just one or two of them in particular. I think he wants to be seen as the guy who has practical plans, you know, that his health care plan is Medicare for all as an option, not as a requirement, and it's a way to say we're going to have a progressive move forward, but not a revolution, and that's basically his calling card. And the same thing is true on a whole lot of issues, including, for example, student loans. He'll forgive some of them, but not all of them. And he'd make public college free for some students, for 80% of Americans, but not for all of them. So you take a list of issues on which other candidates have tried to plant their flag, and you see Pete Buttigieg having a position that goes somewhere down the path but in often cases not as far down the path. And I think what he is saying is two things. A, I am proposing practical plans that can actually get done. And B, and this is, I think, his real calling card, I'm a candidate who's here to unite people, not to fight and divide people further. And that's a comparison to President Trump, but also a comparison to people like Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren.
You think he's gotten a pass from his rival candidates so far in terms of, his record among the African-American community in South Bend?
You know, I'd say he'd gotten sort of a pass until the last couple of weeks. He's getting hammered pretty well now, and this is now inevitable. You become a strong contender, and particularly if you're a contender who is basically taking votes away from both the progressive candidates and the moderate candidates, and that's what happened in Iowa, you're going to get hammered from both sides. And he is now getting hammered from both sides, and I think one of the tests in the New Hampshire primary and then the Nevada and South Carolina ones to come is whether he can sustain those attacks, because they're fairly new.
We're speaking with Jerry Seib, executive Washington editor at The Wall Street Journal. His piece is called Pete Buttigieg Stakes Out a Unique Space in the Democratic Field. You know, I was reading a reaction to your column, some of the comments, and somebody pointed out that they like Pete Buttigieg because he doesn't rant or yell or things like that. Yeah. Is that widespread, that type of appeal?
I think he hopes it is. I mean, it's very definitely what he is trying to do here is present a different kind of candidacy, both in terms of substance and profile, but also in terms of tone. I mean, you know, the word that you hear most from Elizabeth Warren and from Bernie Sanders, and I think increasingly from Joe Biden, is fight. They want to fight, and you know, Donald Trump makes everybody want to fight. Pete Buttigieg is basically saying, I'm here to smooth the waters. It's very Obama-like in that way. I think we should all calm down and figure out ways to have this debate without yelling at each other so much.
Nice, Jerry. Jerry Seib, executive Washington editor at The Wall Street Journal. It's 13 minutes after the hour on this weekend.
I've got that electricity charge inside, energy like the lightning strike. Take one spark and I will ignite, never stopping, I won't stand by.
Now that Human Resources Director Ryan Lee has Kronos for HR, payroll, talent, and time, he's really on top of his game. He even has his own hype song.
I'm the best beyond belief. I got strength and got the speed. I've got that
entire workforce, complete with different hours, skill sets, and pay grades.
No, nobody catching up. They're not fast or strong enough. I've got that electricity charging inside. Take one spark in.
I'm attracting and engaging the best people every step of the way.
Never stopping, I won't stand by.
Kronos, HR solutions for the modern workforce and the people who support them. Learn more at kronos.com/HR swagger.
Never stopping, I won't stand by.
Thanks for being with us. All of a sudden, anxiety over the latest news sends your thoughts on a roller coaster ride about all the bad things that can happen to you. Worried about coronavirus? According to Forbes, fear spreads faster than any virus outbreak. How can you stop the worry from getting out of hand? We're joined now by Warren Archer, author of a new book called I Think, Therefore I Lie, A Radical Technique for Awakening Now. Warren, how do you know you worry too much?
Well, I was one of them. and it's almost, for intelligent people, it's normal to worry because we have the compulsion to believe our thoughts. We think we are our thoughts. I think, therefore I am. And this belief, this negative belief, leads us to believe all the thoughts that pop up. And this causes an issue because we have a compulsion to follow whatever we're thinking. So if you believe that there are degrees of truth, then it's very hard in the moment when you're worried about something to objectively discern what is truer than another thought. And so it becomes just accepting everything that comes in, and it gets out of control very quickly, and worry can become fear. And with the I Think, Therefore I Lie or It'll technique, what is done is you treat all thoughts as equally untrue, and you use them exclusively as tools. And the question is not whether one thought is truer than another or is true at all. The question is whether the thought is beneficial to you at the moment.
Okay, and give an example.
Yeah. Oh, an example would be if you're planning a trip, say, and you tend to be a nervous flyer, and you know you're going on a trip, and you cannot discern between thoughts that are planning thoughts and thoughts that you have no control over. I mean, ideas that you have no control over. So you're worried about turbulence. You're worried about maybe this is the flight where the terrorists will attack or something. And that's mixed in with other worries, like you're worried about weather. Mm-hmm. You're worried about being delayed. And so you can't really plan appropriately. Whereas when you're using this technique, it's very simple to see that all these things are not true in the sense that you cannot determine the future, and you just see which thought is beneficial to you at the moment or not.
All right. So if I'm thinking about how worried I am about an upcoming flight, for example, you mentioned weather, delays, or God forbid a terrorist incident, how do I manipulate that, you know, and get a grip on it?
Well, what do you have control over is, I mean, it's the obvious question. And you can only ask that question if you're detached from the thought, say that these thoughts aren't true, they're about a future, but nobody can know exactly what happens in the future. The future is all about assessing probabilities. And so you can step back from these things and say, well, what do I have control over? I have to be at a meeting at a certain time, and I've picked this particular flight, and it seems to be there might be some weather in the destination airport. So you could plan for contingency of if there are delays, I have this other flight, I leave a bit earlier in case there's a weather issue. There could also be a mechanical issue which could delay the flight, and this happens all the time. And so the probability of that happening is not extremely low. It's reasonable, and it's reasonable to plan for that.
We're speaking with Warren Archer. He's author of a book called I Think, Therefore I Lie. And we're talking about how to stop worrying so much. What percentage of worry comes from things we can't actually control?
All of it, I would say. Yeah. We don't have control over the future. But what we can do is do our best in the present to plan for the future. And worrying is based on believing negative thought.
Thanks, Warren. That's Warren Archer. The book is called I Think, Therefore I Lie. 21 minutes after the hour on this weekend. Thanks for being with us. Picked to finish 12th. In the Big Ten Conference, the surprisingly resurgent Rutgers basketball team is pacing to make its first NCAA tournament since, well, Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch lit up the music world. Here's this weekend's Jennifer Koshenka.
From worst to first, well, not exactly, but it has been quite a season so far for the Rutgers men's basketball team. Lane Higgins of the Wall Street Journal has profiled the Scarlet Knights and joins us now. Lane, how long has it been since RU had a winning record?
Oh, since they've had a winning record, it has been a long, long time.
And how have things been going so far this year?
It's been a bit of a surprise. Rutgers is undefeated at home. They're a perfect 16-0. And within the Big Ten, they're actually in the mix to perhaps not win the conference. It would sort of take a lot of things to break their way, but they're currently tied for third with a few other schools, including Michigan State, which is picked as the preseason number one. So it's been a bit of a weird season for college basketball, but Rutgers is certainly, you know, proving to be on the good side of that weird, I'd say.
Now, Lane, how has Coach Steve Peichel changed the culture? What's he all about?
He has been pretty insistent on, finding the right types of players and, you know, gritty defense, working hard, kind of something that a lot of coaches on the East Coast, I think, do say, and that their teams have grit, they play with heart. But I really do believe that Steve Peichel is coming in with a slightly different perspective in terms of, I want guys that are going to fit in our system, no matter if they're from New Hampshire, like Geo Baker, or California, or from the area, like Ron Harper Jr. And in the past, I think a lot of the success of Rutgers coaches has been judged on whether they're able to get some of the marquee recruits from, you know, the tri-state area, right around Piscataway. And I think that's maybe been a little bit of a way to set up for failure. And when I talked to Coach Pikel, he mentioned that his daughter, who's one of the nation's top lacrosse players, you know, had offers from schools in the state of New Jersey, but she also had offers from Northwestern and Duke and Carolina. And that going through the recruiting process with his daughter, he said, made him realize that, you know, if you're a good enough player, yes, you're going to have the local offers, but you're going to have the choice to go anywhere. And that's true of the kids that are, you know, fantastic basketball players in the state of New Jersey. So if they choose to go elsewhere, that's not necessarily a bad thing about Rutgers. It's just saying that they're really talented. And, you know, I think the school has previously kind of taken it personally when players like Carl Anthony Towns or Jay Williams have chosen to go elsewhere.
We're speaking with Lane Higgins of the Wall Street Journal. Lane, a number of opposing coaches after games have said of Steve Pikel, he's doing things the right way. Mm-hmm. What do you think they mean by that?
Well, he is kind of just a guy that puts his head down and works hard. I would say that he's very humble. Whenever you ask him about, you know, his goals for the season, looking forward, he always just says, we were projected to finish 12th. And he's not trying to put pressure on his players, but he just says, look at how far we've come. And I think that he's very positive in that regard. And especially if you contrast his style to, you know, that of some of the previous coaches who have been fired amid scandals, who have, you know, stepped back because of major issues in the athletic department. He's someone that comes in with, who runs a tight ship, and there hasn't been that many issues. And, you know, hopefully that doesn't prove to change, but it doesn't seem like it because he's just doing things as you're supposed to by the book, I'd say.
Lane, some people call the Rutgers Athletic Center a dump, but as you mentioned, Rutgers is undefeated at that dump. What makes the rack so difficult?
Yeah, so it's funny. They actually call it the trapezoid of terror on campus because it's sort of, on the outside, looks like a concrete trapezoid. It is not very sightly, but inside, there's 8,000 seats. They're kind of right on the court. It's very, very loud. And, you know, even when Rutgers basketball team was not doing great, they still had really faithful fans, and now that they're excited, you know, the rack has been packed for almost all of its games. I think the team is already sold out 6 games, and there's 3 more home games, and tickets for those have been super hard to come by. I think there's resale prices for them on StubHub and Ticketmaster in the several hundreds of dollars, so huge markups from what they usually go for. And, you know, everyone that's been working with the business side has said that they've blown by all of their revenue targets for this year because of how excited fans are around this program. So I think that's just kind of contributing to the fact that the rack is a special place. And I was at, unfortunately not a game at the rack, but when Rutgers came to Madison Square Garden to play Michigan, Rutgers faithful turned out in force, and oh my goodness, they were standing the entire game from the first 2 minutes. They just, you know, you can tell they're excited that they're good.
That's Wall Street Journal sports reporter Lane Higgins with this weekend's Jennifer Koshenka. You want to talk college hoops with Jennifer, by the way? She knows everything. You could find her on Twitter at JKushenka. 30 minutes after the hour on This Weekend.
I'm not a big talker. I am a big doer. But sometimes the only way to solve the problem is to get on the horn and figure it out. So the only people I like talking to? Grainger. With knowledgeable product experts, ready with the answers to my toughest questions, calling Grainger is the one conversation I don't mind having. From machining and motor parts to valves and vacuum pumps, when it comes to solving my problems, Grainger's got my back. Call, click Grainger.com, or stop by to see for yourself. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Thanks for spending time with us. Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koshenka. Coming up this half hour, money lessons you should have learned in your 20s. Also, Nevada's Democrats scrambled to avoid being like Iowa. And the World War II vet whose house is nearly overrun with Valentine's cards. We'll explain why in about 20 minutes. Well, the countdown is on for the Nevada caucus next weekend. The state's Democratic Party is assessing plans for reporting results, scrambling to meet a tight timeline since deep-sixing the app that failed so miserably during the Iowa caucuses. Where is Nevada from a tech standpoint for its caucuses? We're joined by tech analyst Rob Enderle, principal and founder of the Enderle Group. Rob, how do you see this?
Yeah, well, you know, Iowa blew up, and the issue was with the Iowa app was that people were improperly trained. They didn't stress test, did not do a comprehensive trial run. And the end result is when they first found out there was a problem was during the election. Of course, it was a huge embarrassment for Iowa. And worse for the Democratic Party because they wanted to present themselves as an alternative to the president, but incompetence doesn't give a lot of people comfort that they are a good alternative. So this did the party a tremendous amount of damage, particularly coming in as early as it did in the election process. And so Nevada looked at this and said, yeah, we're not doing that. So they've scrapped the app for the most part. And the because now even if they were able to fix the app and stress test it, if anything happened, they'd look like complete idiots. And that's often what happens in cases like this is when you get this level of breakage, the company and the app get blacklisted and nobody will touch them because you just look stupid if anything like this happened again, given the fact it happened once.
Yeah. I can't imagine the scramble that took place after the app failed in Iowa, and Nevada realized that they were next to use it. And when they declared it was time to shut it down, I can't imagine the scramble to now train people and put in some backup plan in place, which they said they had, whether you believe it or not.
Yeah, but the problem here is, once again, they don't have a lot of time to stress test the replacement process they're trying to put in place. And so a lot of us believe that they're going to have a lot of breakage as well because they just don't have the time to put in place an alternative. It might have actually been better if they just fixed the app and used it since they had gone through the training already and the app was in place. Mm-hmm. In other words, just identify what broke in Iowa, fix the parts that broke rather than throwing the baby out with the bathwater. I'm not convinced this was from a practical standpoint was very smart, but from an image standpoint, I don't think they had any choice because, as I say, if it had broken again, regardless of what the cause was, they would have looked like idiots. So that's why people blacklist and the apps like this and go off in some other direction.
We're speaking with tech analyst Rob Enderle, principal and founder of the Enderle Group. We're talking about the Nevada caucus and the technology involved or not involved. I know the Wall Street Journal mentioned that putting new solutions in place now under this compressed timeline can actually increase the risk of error.
Yeah, well, it's very likely that the Nevada election will run into major problems because they just haven't had the time to stress test power runs prior to the actual event, and that means they're just going to break in a different way. It's not good.
Man, where's the artificial intelligence you always talk about helping to rescue this process already?
Well, remember, the Iowa only paid a fraction of what something like that would cost. It really looks to me like both Nevada and Iowa tried to get something done on the cheap, and it backfired on them.
Thanks, Rob. Rob Enderle, principal and founder of the Enderle Group. It's 21 minutes now in front of the hour on this weekend. Coming up next, money lessons you should have been taught in your 20s. Thanks for spending time with us. Ever wonder if your future self will approve of the financial decisions being made by your current self? Regarding that, personal finance expert Jonathan Clements has put together a list of things he wishes he'd been told in his 20s, or, how he says, told more loudly so he would have listened. Jonathan, what prompted this piece?
So I was thinking back about the stuff that really puzzled me in my 20s, some of the anxiety I had as I was starting out in the adult world and managing money, things like, you know, paying off my mortgage and buying the right size home and investing in the stock market. When you're new to all of this, there's so much anxiety involved, and yet looking back, a lot of it was a complete waste of time.
You know, number one, right out of the gate for you, I think, is one certainly that was lost on me on more than one occasion, and that is a small home is the key to a big portfolio.
And there are so many people out there telling you that you should buy the big house, that, you know, this is the key to generating wealth, and of course it's also a way of signaling, you know, your financial status to the entire neighborhood. If you have a nice big house, everybody thinks that you're doing well. But the fact is, for me and for so many people that I know, buying a more modest home has been the key to financial success. Mm-hmm. By buying that more modest home, you have smaller mortgage payments, and that means that you can fund the 401k plan. You can put money into IRAs. You can put money into 529 plans for kids. So if you're in your 20s, your early 30s, and people are saying, oh, yeah, you should buy the biggest house possible, don't listen to them. Buy the modest home, and you will reap the reward on the investment side of your finances.
What did you mean by point number two, debts are negative bonds?
So when I first bought a house back in 1992, you know, and through the mail came the first mortgage slip. You know, you had to return it, the tear off with a check to cover the mortgage payment. And then there was this line about, you know, did you want to put in any extra? And so I remember putting in an extra $10, which would go towards paying down the principal, and what it meant with a fixed-rate mortgage is that you would pay off the loan more quickly than the required 30 years. And it seemed like a smart thing to me to do. I mean, the interest rate on my mortgage back in 1992 was over 7%. You know, it was a pretty high savings. But it was only later that I came to understand that paying down a mortgage, or really paying down any sort of debt, is what's called a negative bond. In other words, instead of earning interest by buying bonds, you're effectively paying interest to others when you have debt. And if you can pay off that debt more quickly, you earn a rate of return equal to that interest rate.
Speaking with Jonathan Clements, founder and editor of HumbleDollar.com, he's written a piece entitled Nobody Told Me. And what he's done is listed 10 things he'd wish he'd known earlier on in life. I chuckled at number five. You said nobody knows squat about short-term investment performance.
And yet, you know, people talk constantly about it. They talk constantly about which way the stock market is headed, which way interest rates are headed, which stocks are going to do well. And I've been listening to this nonsense for 35 years, Gordon. And I can tell you, you know, you are better off throwing darts at a dartboard. Nobody knows. They are all just guessing. But this is how, you know, you fill hours of time on CNBC, and people find it entertaining. And entertainment is fine as long as it doesn't cost you money. And the problem is people act on this information.
Thanks, Jonathan. Jonathan Clements, personal finance expert, also founder and editor of HumbleDollar.com. It is 14 minutes now in front of the hour on this weekend. Hiring is challenging, but there's one place you can go where hiring is simple, fast, and smart, and growing businesses connect to qualified candidates. Dylan Miskowitz, COO of Cafe Altura, experienced how challenging hiring can be after unsuccessfully searching for a director of coffee for his organic coffee company. But then he switched to ZipRecruiter and saw an immediate difference. And you can too by signing up for free at ZipRecruiter.com/Gordon. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you, it finds them for you. And its technology identifies people with the right experience and invites them to apply to your job, so you get qualified candidates faster. In fact, after posting his job to ZipRecruiter, Dylan said he was amazed by how quickly great candidates were applying and found his new director of coffee in just a few days. With results like that, it's no wonder 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. See why ZipRecruiter is effective for businesses of all sizes. Try ZipRecruiter for free at our web address, ZipRecruiter.com/Gordon. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Gordon. Thanks for spending time with us. Even if everything navigation is pointing in the direction of GPS, you'll never tear some folks away from their paper maps. Sales of the old school maps are actually on the rise. U.S. sales of print maps and road atlases have had a 5-year compound annual growth rate of 10%. With Google Maps, Apple Maps, and Waze seemingly growing by leaps and bounds, why would paper still sell? We're joined now by Ed Baig, technology writer at USA Today. Ed, paper maps, really?
Paper maps typically won't steer you in the wrong direction. Not that we don't all love GPS. Paper maps don't run out of battery. And people like the fact that, you know, a paper map, you know, you lay it on a table flat, and it just gives you a perspective to get, obviously, with GPS or looking at a, you know, an app on your phone where you're looking really at a small screen. It just gives you the sweep and perspective you wouldn't get otherwise.
I hate to admit it, Ed. Is this an age thing? Is it us old folks who like the old paper map?
I think that's actually partly true, not completely true, but certainly, you know, the people who traditionally would run to the AAA for a tick, or, you know, who had road atlases in their car. But having said that, I did talk to a number of people of different ages who like the idea of having paper, even as a backup, because again, or if you're out hiking somewhere or surfing or out on a boat, there are a lot of places where you want specialized paper maps, you know, where GPS either falls short or, again, you want it for that backup. Mm.
Who still makes paper maps, by the way? And do you have to be selling something else in your store in order to make a profit?
Actually, a lot of people still sell paper maps. And surprisingly, and this surprised me, you know, I talked to the Rand McNallys of the world, and they've seen an uptick in sales. We talked to some analysts who said that year-over-year sales for paper maps and atlases are actually still on the rise. I talked to a guy who owns this place called the Map Shop, which is down in Charlotte, North Carolina. They've actually expanded their retail presence, now in part that's to do some manufacturing of kind of these three-dimensional raised maps. But business is still, you know, they're still doing well, although the owner told me, he can't go a day where somebody will walk in and say, you guys are still in business?
Wow. We're speaking with Ed Baig, tech columnist at USA Today. He's written a fun piece entitled, Move Aside, Google Maps, Apple Maps, and GPS, Why People Still Love Their Paper Maps. All right, so that said, as you point out, these popular apps are upgrading. What's going on?
Yeah, Apple has just come out with a new version of Apple Maps. It focuses, by the way, a lot on privacy, because that's another thing. You know, a paper map's not going to track you. But Apple is insisting that they have very strong privacy controls in there. Google does track you to some degree, although there is something called incognito mode, which you can enable to also implement some privacy protections there. But both Google Maps and Apple Maps are constantly upgrading and trying to make the experience better, which I think for the most part they have.
The stories of people driving into lakes seem to be falling off, at least. It's not the same it was.
Yeah, no, that's for sure. I remember driving, this is some time ago, but driving in the Upper West Side of Manhattan looking for a gas station, and the GPS basically said, oh, there's one nearby in New Jersey. What they didn't factor in was nearby, across the river.
Right.
But, it's gotten a lot better since those days, to be fair.
Thanks, Ed. Ed Baig, technology writer at USA Today. It is 6 minutes now in front of the hour on this weekend.
Now that Human Resources Director Fernando Pino has Kronos for HR, payroll, talent, and time, he's completely crushing it. He even has his own hype song.
Supporting our entire workforce, everyone has different hours, skill sets, and pay grades. I'm on the top, I'm gonna rise up. I'm on the top, top, I'm gonna rise up. Motivating and engaging our people every step of the way.
Kronos, HR solutions for the modern workforce and the people who support them. Learn more at kronos.com/HR swagger. I'm on the top, I'm gonna rise up. I'm on the top,
top, I'm gonna rise up. I'm on the top. Thanks for being with us. William White, a 104-year-old U.S. Marine veteran who earned a Purple Heart in World War II, is celebrating Valentine's Day this year like never before, surrounded by a mountain of 70,000 love letters and counting sent from all over the world. The cards and notes to Major Bill, as he's known, a retired major who lives in an assisted living facility in Stockton, California, began pouring in after a fellow resident launched a social media campaign called Operation Valentine, asking friends and strangers alike to send greetings to honor Mr. White. The response has absolutely outstripped all expectations. So much mail has been delivered that his family has had to enlist volunteers to help open the cards and read them to Mr. White, who retired after 35 years of active service, including time in the Pacific Theater, where he was wounded at Iwo Jima. All the Valentine's hype is new to Major Bill, who said he never really celebrated Valentine's Day, even when his wife of 42 years was alive. He is surrounded by stacks of postal boxes that are waist high, full of cards and letters. The original goal, by the way, was just 100 cards. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koschenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Weekend. Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Geico could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save.